But despite his surprise, the only words that he said, he opened his mouth and closed it and said, "Maggie, what are you doing here?" And then he said, "We're going to come out of this. We're going to come out of this as a unit. We're going to bring our wounded and our equipment. We're going to come out as a unit, I tell you. And we're coming out as Marines, or not at all." There was a great sense of urgency. The man was obviously tired and nerve-wracked, but this tremendous pride in his organization. They were going to come out as Marines, and not at all. Was so uppermost. He was so frantic. The Marines had never retreated. Never in their history had they ever retreated. And it was such a blow to his pride and to what he thought the Marines stood for. And the point of pride was that they were going to come out. They were going to come out of this honorably. And I think that that pride held that unit together in its cohesion and way, and they fought out, as you know, as a unit. And we've all read about the long trek from Hagaru to Hungnam, which they all called, they said it wasn't a retreat, it was an advance to the rear. And when Murray told his officers about the forthcoming retreat in a snowy field outside his regimental tent at Hagaru, which his enemy encircled, their perimeter, they were fighting the whole time. The enemy was around them the whole time. He told them that it was an attack in the other direction, and he justified it saying, "There are more Chinese behind us than there are ahead of us anyway." The Hungnam beachhead proved something. It proved that a curtain of fire in a small area can be so strong and so thick that even the enemy, having a great manpower resources, cannot break through in any effective number. When they pulled down to a small beachhead, a small territory, the ships in the harbor, Missouri and all the rest of them, were able to, every time there was even a localized attack, the ships would fire on previous, they'd already sighted in on the places, and the people in the perimeter would call their positions and ask for fire. The artillery would come in at the same time, and so would the planes. Gradually, as the perimeter got smaller and smaller, the artillery was taken off the beach. And as the beachhead became smaller, it was then, of course, the area necessary to cover and make this curtain of steel was smaller. Then you had your ships and your planes. But the important thing is we got 100,000 people out of there, and we took our time about it. We took 10 days. Now, I don't think we even had 200 casualties. By casualties, I mean wounded, not killed. And in the last few days, we didn't have any. And it shows what we can do if we ever, and I hope we don't, but if we ever are forced to evacuate any other beachhead. I was very amused by the Admiral Doyle, who radioed the day that the last soldier had left the beachhead at Hungnam, and he sent the following message. It was 2:35 in the afternoon, and the cable came into Tokyo very shortly thereafter, announcing that the beachhead was clear. And the announcement came in this cable, and I'm quoting it exactly. He said it was, quote, "a case of walk, don't run to the nearest exit. They never laid a glove on it," which is exactly what happened. In Korea, the Chinese, by intervening and attacking us, confronted us with a series of alternatives, all of which are unpleasant. The first alternative I'm against, so I'll dismiss it very briefly, and that is ceding the Asian mainland without a fight to the Soviet world. I don't think you can separate the Chinese from the Russians any more than you can separate the Poles from the Russians. I think that the Soviet world, including China, is operating under the same general international strategy. If Russia is geographically constructed so that whether we like it or not, it has two fronts. It has a front on the Pacific. Its land border extends so that it has a front on the Pacific. Its land border extends so that it has a front in Europe. Now, in the Cold War, it's been fighting a two-front war. And it made a tremendous gain in the Cold War by getting China on its side. If we succeed the entire Asian mainland to Russia, we are saying, in effect, to this country, which has two fronts, your eastern flank, your eastern front, is secure. That's yours. As everyone knows, any country prefers to fight a war, cold or hot, on one front at a time. If Russia has the benefit of having its eastern flank secured by our pulling out voluntarily from Asia, it will have, naturally, the possibility of concentrating on Europe, on the Middle East, and any place else that it considers vital after it has tested out those other points. I think that I can best tell you what the experts on Asia feel, and I'm not going to name any names because it will only complicate it, but in talking to people like General MacArthur, and whom you may or may not consider an expert on Asia, and some of the British and the French and the rest in the Far East, their view, for better or for worse, and I'm a reporter and I'm reporting their views, are that if you feed, that is, if the American people feed unconditionally the Asian front to Russia, that we will, in due time, lose Europe too, because Russia will be able to consolidate its gains and consolidate the rice bowl into China, Siam, the resources of rubber, very important for war machines, all the rest of the resources of that part of the world, which are immeasurable. And it's a chain reaction. If China should get into China, China should get into China, then Japan would have no place to get its surplus rice. Japan would be without a market. Japan, unless we were ready to keep it on a dole indefinitely, would probably eventually go into the red and so forth. So they're against ceding the Asian mainland to Russia. What are the alternatives? The alternatives are to fight a series of holding actions in Korea, if necessary. I hope it won't be necessary anyplace else. While we build in America to a point where we are trained as we have trained manpower and we have enough weapons so that we're no longer what the Chinese call a paper tiger. That is, that when we speak diplomatically, we have force with which to back up what we ask for, what we think is right, and what we think is necessary to a world which is without the current tensions that now beset it. I'll be more specific. I think that the West and the Soviet Union and its satellites are in a fight to the finish. It's barely possible that fight, that great test of strength, great struggle for power, can be resolved diplomatically. We fail in dealing with the Soviet Union when we're weak. We've certainly tried it. I watched it in Germany for 4 years after the Second World War ended. So, having failed when we're weak, I think the only alternative is to approach the Soviet world and we're strong. If Russia, when confronted by the greater armed strength of the Western world, will roll back its influence to its own borders, freeing the satellite countries, and I'm here as a witness that they want to be free, having spent a good many years behind the Iron Curtain there, freeing the satellite countries, freeing Germany, Eastern Germany, then many, in fact, the greater tensions that beset us now will disappear. If we can't have a diplomatic showdown, and if an armed conflict comes, I want to be sure that our world wins at the least possible cost. I saw the price we paid for being unprepared in Korea, and I'm sure you'll all agree that America must not pay that higher price again. Thank you very much.